This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people and rich culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana. Our taping is made possible with the support of Raider, a hands-on IT service provider that integrates all of your needs for advanced technical support, effective communication options, and cybersecurity. Raider's motto is, you just want it to work, we understand. Please visit RaiderSolutions.com for more information. Our podcast is also made possible with the support of our premier sponsor, IberiaBank. They support our community in so many ways, and their dynamic team is committed to serving the banking needs of clients in this region and throughout the southeastern United States. IberiaBank offers the resources of a national bank with the personal touch of a community bank. Please visit IberiaBank.com for more information. The generosity of Lafayette General Health also makes this podcast possible. Lafayette General has been a leader in telemedicine. With the Health Anywhere app, your family can access quality urgent care at any time without an appointment, all from the comfort of home. It's the waiting room redefined. Download the app today at lghealthanywhere.com. Kay Kare Gotro, a native of Lafayette and practicing attorney of 33 years, is our guest today. Kay is a candidate for judge in the 15th Judicial District, Division K, in Lafayette Parish in the upcoming November 3rd election. A graduate of LSU Law School, Kay has experience in civil and criminal law, all areas of litigation, and managing jury and non-jury cases. She served as a law clerk for two district judges in state and federal court. Additionally, Kay was appointed by the Louisiana Supreme Court on several occasions as a judge pro tem. In addition to her law practice, Kay has served on the board of the Lafayette Parish Bar Association, Lafayette Volunteer Lawyers, UL Lafayette Alumni, St. Thomas More Advisory Council, Our Lady of Fatima Foundation, Our Lady of Fatima Alumni Council, Acadiana Republican Women's Organization, the Lafayette Women's Chamber of Commerce, and Lafayette Junior League. Her achievements include being selected as the Outstanding Young Lawyer for the State of Louisiana, the University of Louisiana Volunteer of the Year, Louisiana State Bar Foundation Fellow, Honoree, 2012 Distinguished Warrior Award, and she's been named Best in Acadiana. Kay is married to Mitch Gotro, and they have two children, Michelle and Matthew. Kay Kare Gotro, welcome to Discover Lafayette.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me.
Yeah, and let me get in a little dig on myself. This is round two. You're being very kind, along with Jason Sikora at Raider. I talk about this in the past podcast, but sometimes the sound quality isn't quite right, and I wanted you to have your voice strong and clear in your race, and so thank you for making time.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. Now look, before we started, we've been talking about the history of Lafayette, so I'd like you, if you would, for many people that may not know you, would you talk about your love of Lafayette? You grew up here. Maybe talk about your childhood, you know, school experiences, and we'll move on to more adult endeavors.
Yeah, so, absolutely. Yes, being born and raised in Lafayette, I have really deep roots here in the community. Before we went on air, we were talking about the years of living in Lafayette and seeing a thriving oil center, being part of LADCO and the history that LADCO created in this community as such a viable industry. And it was a wonderful experience. I went to Our Lady of Fatima for elementary, and I graduated from the high school there. And we even got out of school and had school field trips to see the LADCO oil exhibit. And it was a wonderful experience. It provided such a level of amazement at how wonderful this industry is and how important it is to our community.
Well, it was really an oil town. I mean, I know your father, we're going to talk about him in a bit, he was an attorney. But people either worked for the oil companies as executives, or they were oil field hands, oil field service companies, and then of course we had our thriving medical and attorneys and other professionals, but it really was an oil town.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I grew up right near Blackham Coliseum, and so we would see all of the people coming and going and seeing license plates from all over the country, and that was just amazing. It made Lafayette seem like such an important part of of our whole country and the way it ran. So that was just a very influential part of my life. It breaks my heart to see what we're going through now. I think that industry needs so much support. And I hope people do understand and appreciate how important the oil industry is. And hopefully it will come back. Maybe not like it was, but it will come back.
And so, thrive.
It will. The people in that business are, they have that entrepreneurial spirit. They're not going to go down without a fight. So,
no. Yes. So you graduated from Fatima. I know you have a large family. Now you're one of how many?
Siblings? One of six kids in our family, yes. We all went to Fatima for 12 years. We all went to USL.
Your little uniforms.
Yes, we wore our uniforms, yes. And then four of us went to law school out of the six. The other two, my sister Carla and my sister Caroline, one is a civil engineer, and she got her master's in traffic, so she's a traffic engineer. And my other sister graduated in accounting and is doing that. So,
right.
But the four of us, all the four lawyers, all stayed in Lafayette. Mm-hmm. So I have a big family here. And I talk about this all the time, but I have 41 first cousins. So on my mom's side, my mom was a Bustani.
Okay.
And
that is a large family,
A very large family. And so all of her siblings had six or more. So we have 41 first cousins on one side. And that was a wonderful thing growing up because we gathered as a family twice a year. At my grandparents' house. So we all are very close. And that's something that's really carried on in my own family because we still gather, the six of us and our children, so that they stay close.
Right. So you went to LSU Law School. And,
I did.
Talk about that. I mean, did you always want to be an attorney?
I did. I was very lucky to have some great role models in my life. I mean, my dad was probably my hero in the sense that he sort of represented all that was good about lawyers. We all say as lawyers, we went to law school to help people. But I sort of saw that firsthand. He was the kind of guy that would receive payment in vegetables and watermelon and, you know, fish and anything in between. You know, clients who couldn't afford would bring us things. We had a sack of pecans one time show up at our house. And so I really felt like Daddy was fulfilling a need for people, and he was very well loved because he was a kind gentleman. And so that was my role model growing up. So I felt like I wanted to do the same thing. I wanted to be able to be out in the community practicing and helping people.
Right. Well, when you graduated, did you immediately get a clerking job? Is that when you had one of your first positions?
I did. When I graduated from LSU Law School, I came back and I clerked for a state court judge, Judge Benny Gautreaux. I did that for a year.
And no relation, you were saying.
No relation to my husband, but it's Division K, believe it or not, which is the same seat that I'm running for. So I have firsthand knowledge of what that seat does. And I worked with him for a year, managed his docket, wrote opinions, basically went everywhere he went to sort of see what was going on with the court system. After that, I went and worked for the federal judge, Judge John Shaw, and I was his law clerk. They call him now a legal assistant, and I did that for 12 years.
Is that a like a job description?
It is. It's a permanent, they call them permanent law clerks, whereby I never intended on it being a permanent job, but I guess he and I got along so well. He liked the way I wrote. He liked how I managed the office. And so he asked me to stay on. And I guess 2 years turned into 12 years.
It did? Oh, 12 years with Judge Shaw. What a prince of a man.
He was. Oh, he was. Yeah. Just so that when I say I had such great role models, after I became a lawyer, he became the role model, or he's who I would try to emulate if I were elected to be the next judge, because he was so smart and so kind and so user-friendly, never demeaned anyone. He always was in control of the situation, yet he was as kind and gentle an individual as you would ever want to meet.
When you were a law clerk, you know, I clerked also, and I wish I had clerked for Judge Shaw. I passed that up, and I regret that, but you learn so much, at least I did, watching other attorneys, and you see the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Right.
Would you say, like, it's, you really do learn, though, who is at the top of their game.
Absolutely.
And it's all about preparation and demeanor.
Absolutely. And when we were there, we knew when we had good lawyers come in, and we would have a lot of good lawyers come in front of us, it was such a pleasure to see that. And me as a law clerk, I learned so much from that, because you would receive these briefs that would be so well written that you could see the law and you understood the logic behind what these rulings were. And so, yeah, it was a great experience. And it prepared me for when I did then leave working for the court and then went into private practice. So I initially worked for a defense firm when I left the federal court. Judge Shaw passed away. And I moved on and worked for a defense firm. So that in and of itself taught me something that I didn't know, and that was the business side of practice.
Billable hours.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it takes a lot of work to survive in a hourly working environment. You have to, you know, report to people. You have to be on top of your game. So I learned a lot from the defense side, and the budgetary restraints and all of that.
Well,
that
the client demands. I mean, they, you know, they want you to do things efficiently, you know, and, and get their, you know, have their case heard well. But there's so many restraints when you work in a law firm. So,
And it was wonderful experience. I worked along with Pat Hanna, who is now a federal magistrate judge. And he was top notch as well. So after I left the firm, I opened my own practice, which was something I think I was always evolving towards, getting back to doing what my dad had done. And that was a general litigation practice. So when I got into private practice, at that point, I had the tools that I needed because I knew how to research and write. I knew what judges looked for in legal opinions. And I also knew the business side of the practice. It teaches you your worth, and it teaches you how you're supposed to do it so that you can run an efficient office. So I've been doing that now, believe it or not, nearly 20 years. So,
While raising your children.
Yes. So when I left the federal court, I think I had a two-year-old and a six-month-old. So, yeah, it was, you do what you got to do, and you do it well, and you do it with joy. And I felt like being able to run my own practice and have my family at the same time was a real blessing.
Well, I know that dads agree, but in particular working moms, when you're working full time in a challenging career and you're raising small children, it's those days can be tough.
Yes.
But you've got to get organized and get with it.
Absolutely. And a lot of help.
A lot of family.
Yes. A lot of family help. A lot of husband help. A lot of just all the way around. You know, it does take a village, believe it or not. And friends, we would, you know, carpool and do all the things we needed to do to make sure everybody was taken care of. But I never regretted working while I was raising my children because... I think it taught my kids a lot, too. I think that there's no shame in work, and I think that they admired that I was doing something that, that helped people and made me happy.
And we were more of in a transitional era, but today, you know, most women have to work just to make ends meet and keep up, not with the Jones so much, but just keep up with finances and all. So you, you taught your children that. Well, speaking of family, if we may pause for Discover Lafayette's Past, this is brought to you by Rally Marketing, a full-service digital marketing agency that can assist you with marketing automation, content development, and strategies on how to use social media to turn into a moneymaker for your business. For more information, please visit rallymarketing.com. And now the moment, which focuses on Kay's dad, the late Albert Carré, who served with distinction in World War II. Mr. Carré was a recipient of the Purple Heart, the Silver Star, the Bronze Star, and many other medals. He served as Lafayette City Prosecutor and Lafayette City Attorney. And Kay, I found this article when I was researching him online from 1959 that I wanted to share, and it was printed in Octofoil, a periodical in Columbus, Ohio. And this is what the letter said. Mr. Joe Lynch of Allendale, New Jersey, father of Captain Paul Lynch, received a letter from Albert M. Carré, a prominent attorney from Lafayette, Louisiana. Known as Little Man Carré, Al was a great friend of Captain Lynch's. Noting in the letter received by Mr. Lynch from Little Man was the following comment. I want you to know how much I thought of your son, Paul, whom I served in the 29th Infantry. You may have great consolation in the fact that your son was an outstanding officer and as a man beloved by all who knew him. He served with honor and distinction, and at the time of his death, he set an example to all who served with him. And I did note that your dad was humble, and he was known to say that he owed his life to a helmet and the good Lord. And I wanted to get that in because when I moved here, you know, I knew of your father, and what a gentleman, and what an example he did set for not only attorneys, but I know for your family and friends.
I always felt like Daddy appreciated every day that he had on this earth because he had seen such atrocities when he was in the war. He was in the 39th Infantry. They were there in Europe for 4 years. I actually have his photo album from the war. Daddy was in the Battle of the Bulge. He was in Sicily, North Africa, France, Germany, Belgium. And for a young man to have lived a life like that and then come back to a humble, small town, what a culture shock it must have been. Mm-hmm. But he always appreciated everything in life, I think, because of the experiences he had had. He he knew that things were always better. No matter how bad they were better than what he had seen.
Right.
And and what you saw was what you got with Daddy. He was a sweet man on the outside, and he was a sweet man at home. I'm very proud of Daddy.
I know. So Little Man.
Yes. Yes. He was only 5'6". So actually when I got married, I had heels on. I was a little bit taller than Daddy.
That's okay.
Yeah. Yes. My mom always complained because she liked to wear heels, and she couldn't wear her heels because she would be taller than he was.
Right.
So, yeah.
Now, what did he do when he returned from the war? Had he already gone to law school, or did he go to law school after his service?
After he went after. He came back, and he and my mom at that point had met. He actually coincidentally had been dating her cousin.
Oh,
so
drama.
So they broke up, and then he started dating my mom. Mm-hmm. And when they got married, they were living in Crowley. And Daddy opened a jewelry store called Kay's Jewelers, which is not the Kay's Jewelers, but I was named after the jewelry store. But Daddy always wanted to further his education. He always wanted to go to law school. He was a history major at LSU. And he had intended on going to law school when the war broke out. And he went from LSU straight into the European campaign. So he told my mom, I want to go to law school. She said, well, let's do it. So they sold the business and moved to New Orleans. And he went to Loyola on the GI Bill. Mm-hmm. And they were on a trimester system so he could get his schooling in quicker.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but it was something that he always wanted to do, and mom recognized that. So off he went.
Right.
And then when they came back, he settled in Lafayette to practice.
Right, which was a smaller town then, but on the up and up, you know, right before the oil center opened. So,
And mama was from Lafayette. So
she wanted to get back home. It's always that.
Yes.
So you've been appointed to serve as a judge in court. I guess they call it judge pro tem. How does that work? Like, how did you get to do that?
So people understand what a judge pro tem is. It's literally a temporary judge. So when judges are either at a conference mm-hmm. or they're ill or for whatever reason they can't be on the bench, they need, for lack of a better term, a substitute judge. So each court generally tries to get a panel of those individuals, lay or lawyers, who would be available to do that. Mm-hmm. And I was asked by Judge Bouillon and Judge Saloom uh-huh. to be on that. So I had to turn in all my information. The Louisiana Supreme Court has to approve. Mm-hmm. And then when an opportunity comes up, they then appoint you uh-huh. For a week, for a day, for right. whatever time. So that was a wonderful experience.
That's city court.
Yes.
And you really see real life.
Yes.
Like they're not small claims. The dollar amount might be less, but they're just as real to the people that are in court as the larger dollar volume yes. cases. But they try, don't they? They hear everything.
Yes, they do.
Landlord disputes.
Correct.
Small offenses. Like it's busy.
As I recall, the case, I had a week where I was there where I presided over juvenile matters, okay. which was so eye-opening mm-hmm. because I think we had a 14-year-old, and I want to say it was like an attempted murder. I mean, it was just, I was shocked by the fact that this kid mm-hmm. was coming to court, you know, shackled, and
yeah,
it was a very eye-opening experience. Yeah. We actually tried a case where a kid had brought drugs to school, so we tried that. Mm-hmm. So it gave me good experience. I had to listen to the case. I had to hear the evidentiary objections, make rulings on the fly, and mm-hmm. then render an opinion at the mm-hmm. end of the trial. So that was a great experience.
Yeah. Is that what made you want to run for judge?
I think so. It gave me a taste of it. I know that I've always aspired to do this. And it sounds corny, but I truly believe in our system of justice. I truly believe mm-hmm. in the court system. And I want to be a good example of how the system can work. That when litigants come to court, they're going to see a judge who listens. They're going to see a judge who's smart enough to understand the issues. That they're going to see a judge who's willing to find the right result in the case, to know what the facts are, to listen to the law, and to apply it fairly. And that's what I want. I want to show integrity. Mm-hmm. I don't want people to think that justice is just figured out on the fly. Yeah. There is a process there, mm-hmm. and I want to be a good example to that.
Right.
So,
right. Are there things that you've identified that you'd like to do if elected that would improve the court system? Are there some things that you could discuss?
Yes. Right now, as we all know, with COVID, there's been a tremendous backlog. Mm-hmm. We have not had any jury trials because we can't call jurors in. We didn't have big enough spaces to put mm-hmm. them in and all of that. So there is a backlog. And so I do have ideas about exactly what I'd like to do. I'd like to add trial weeks. I'd like to have pretrial conferences, perhaps by phone, electronically, so that we can get cases set back on the docket, mm-hmm. set not just a cookie cutter scheduling order, but something that applies to that case. So the cases that are ready to be tried can get tried sooner. Those that need more time will get those on there. But I'd like to add more jury weeks, mm-hmm. add more trial weeks, so that we can facilitate the lawyers in getting these cases up right. and out.
Would you explain that? I know when we spoke before, you said that each judge has 2 weeks. Would you explain how it works? Because I thought there'd be a lot more weeks of cases. But I know that judges do a lot more than just have jury trials. There's a lot that goes on. But could you explain how it works when
yes.
you're in the system?
So the seat that I'm running for, it's a court of general jurisdiction. So what is on that judge's docket mm-hmm. throughout the entire year includes felony trials, felony pretrials, misdemeanor court, probation revocation, sometimes bond reduction hearings. Those are all areas. Mm-hmm. Plus, you have a full civil docket, which is lawsuits that are filed. Right. When a lawsuit is progressing, they then file motions. Mm-hmm. So you have to have rule days where you're hearing nothing but motions. There's a lot of different things that this judge is going to hear. Mm-hmm. So what they have done is taken the trial calendar, and the calendar for 2021 is already out, so I've already seen what's coming. They'll have 1 week of per month of felony jury trials. Okay. They will have 1 week per month of nothing but misdemeanor court. They may do a week in Acadia, because mm-hmm. this seat also covers Acadia and Vermilion. Mm-hmm. So when you take a year of a court system and you divide it up week by week, it doesn't leave much room for them to have a trial all mm-hmm. the time.
We all picture like Perry Mason, you know, the drama in the courtroom, but that's really a piece of a bigger puzzle. Yeah.
Yes. So when they set cases, they'll set multiple cases, but often a lot of those cases settle out. So sometimes judges end up having full weeks where they're not doing anything at mm-hmm. all. So I'd like to be a little more efficient in us trying to set cases that we either know will be tried or cases that we know we can get resolved.
Right. So I interviewed Chief Judge Marilyn Castle earlier this summer, and that's when things were just coming back up with COVID, and she discussed how everyone has had to pivot and quickly figure out, like I have, you know, using technology. And so in the past, there weren't a lot of phone conferences or Zoom, but now people have figured out you can do quite a bit without even leaving your own office.
Absolutely.
You can't sentence, she said, you can't sentence someone who's been convicted of a crime. That has to be in person. But many other things can be done remotely. So it seems like that really is going to help the whole system be more efficient.
Yes, and it'll reduce the cost of litigation. Mm-hmm. Often people complain about the cost of litigation. If a lawyer has to leave his office, say it's in Crowley, and drive to Lafayette 30 mm-hmm. minutes, sit in the hallway for 30 minutes, go in the conference for 30 minutes, drive right. back, you're looking at 2 hours of time mm-hmm. where we can pick up the phone at an appointed time, mm-hmm. have that conference in 15 minutes, and everybody gets back to whatever else they were doing. Mm-hmm. So it's a good system.
Right. You know? I have a question, and this is more of a lawyer question. I always navigated more to, or gravitated more to paper, like, you know, doing real estate title work and will successions. And a judge's day, as you said, is really dynamic, but it's courtroom based. Do you gravitate more to civil or criminal? Do you, you know, are there things that just came more naturally to you, or if you can discuss that? Because you've kind of evolved over the years in you're doing.
I enjoy litigation. I enjoy courtroom work. In my practice, I do both civil and criminal work. Both of them have their upside and both have their downside. I will say this, I'm the only candidate that's running that is actively practicing both civil and criminal litigation. So I have seen everything as it evolves from before COVID to where mm-hmm. we are now. So I feel like my practice is pretty balanced in both, because I've done criminal defense work for years, both in state court, federal court. Mm-hmm. I've also done public defender work, where I've represented all the misdemeanor drug offenses, all the domestic abuse battery violations of protective order. But I've also done city court, where I'm an assistant city prosecutor, where I prosecute. So mm-hmm. then on that side, I've seen the prosecutorial side. But I've enjoyed both of those aspects. Mm-hmm. And then in my civil practice, not only do we do courtroom work, but I also do successions and wills, and I've done interdictions and mm-hmm. things like that. Those will also be the types of cases that
those
will come
tough.
Before the judge.
Those are very tough.
And the judge is there, has to review the paperwork, approve or not approve. So I feel like I'm equipped to do that.
Right. Well, I want to know what it's like from your perspective to be running for office, because I know you've done this before. I've run for office, and I find it's life-changing.
It is.
In a good way.
It is. You know? It's a lot of fun for the candidate, honestly. We meet so many wonderful people. People have been very kind. It's the most refreshing part is when a stranger comes up to you and said, I've read about you, or I believe in you, or a friend of mine came and you did good work for them, or I had someone send a email message, you represented my son and I'm supporting you, and things like that. So that really lifts you up. The difficult part is it's so hard on your spouse and your children, and you know,
let's face it, it's hard on you too. It's demanding.
Yes, it is. And you're putting yourself out there. Everyone has an opinion about you,
and it's like you're not a real person sometimes. Like you're this whatever,
right?
A figure.
Right. I know.
You probably haven't gotten any of that, but I would get feedback sometimes.
It's interesting, though. I mean, people do come up to you. I get a lot, you know, now it's all through Facebook. And so people private message and ask some very probing questions. But I never dodge them. I always, I hit it head on. I was asked about my religion. I was asked about, you know, different things that, you know, and I have to explain who it is and what I am. And I think that that's important, because I'll get back a response. Thank you for your thoughtful response. Or, I didn't know that. And things like that, which is good. It gives me the opportunity to educate people, and I want them to know I am a living, breathing person, and I'm happy to, you know, I'm putting myself out there. I want you to know who I am and feel comfortable with who I am.
What's interesting to me is running for judge is different than running for state legislature or city council. Other offices, you know, Democrat, Republican, gun rights, abortion, all these different things, you know, that does play into what you're going to do as an elected official, maybe not city council, but other higher elected offices. But for a judge, even though, let's say you're a Republican, which I know you are, when you're on the bench, you're not Democrat or Republican. You are a jurist. You're in there.
Correct.
You are making sure that the rules are followed, that justice is rendered.
Absolutely.
And it's not about your religion or your political beliefs. If you can maybe touch on that, like what kind of temperament do you think is that you bring to this?
I 100%. I mean, that is what a judge is. We're fair and impartial. If you've seen the statue of Lady Justice, justice is blind. So we don't see people as anything more than two equal parties coming before the court. I look at the new justice that's up for nomination. And, you know, her religious belief has become something that people have talked about, and just different things about her. We feel the same way. You know, yes, I'm a Catholic, but I respect people who don't believe what I believe. We are here to render a fair and just opinion. We are duty bound to follow the law. We are not legislators. We don't legislate from the bench. We don't make law where there is none. We take the law as it's written, we interpret it according to the facts, and then we render a just decision. And so, but to say all of that, I can't change who I am. I mean, I am who I am. I was raised in this community. The values of this community is who I am. And those are the things that I think come into play with when you say temperament, or how you conduct people, your court, or how you treat people, the cordiality. Those are all of the things that I think that you want to know who I am as a human being, what my religious beliefs are, what my views are, because I want to translate that into respect, being user-friendly, being understanding, and those things. But at the end of the day, we're duty-bound, and we do follow the law.
Right. Well, it's quite a large division this Division K, if you could explain, you were running in Lafayette Parish, and it, from what I understand, this division is almost all of Lafayette. It's how many people?
It's 120,000 voters, yes. Yeah.
So what dimensions, pretty much, if you can just generalize, who will have the opportunity to vote?
Yes. So I tell people that Division K is elected by Lafayette Parish only, south of I-10.
Okay.
So we do not include Cairn Crow, and we do not include Upper Lafayette, which has been carved out as a minority district. Mm-hmm. But we include everything else, which is Youngsville, Broussard, Milton, Scott, Dusson, Judice, and then all of Lafayette south of I-10.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's huge.
It is. Yeah. It's a lot of territory to cover. I'll probably get new shoes and new tires when this is over with.
Some new Skechers.
Yes, my car needs new tires and I need new shoes. We've covered a lot of territory in this election. But meeting wonderful people. But so if elected, I would not only, though, while elected in Lafayette Parish, I would also preside in Acadia and Vermilion, which is all part of the 15th Judicial District.
Right. And this year, Marilyn Castle did note that there are many seats. I think there's
six judges.
Oh, boy.
Out
that's
of 13.
Lot. Yeah, that's a big turnover.
There will be new faces. There'll be a new crew in there.
And a lot to learn. Not only a lot to learn, but also dealing with the COVID restrictions. So it's going to be an interesting process.
It will be.
Yeah.
It will be.
So, Kay, the election is November 3rd. I know you're just counting down the days and hours at this point. Where can people go to find out more about you and your elections if they want to help or contribute?
Yes. So I have a Facebook page, which is Kay Gotro for Judge. Or they can go to KG for Judge, and that goes to my website. As judicial candidates, we cannot fundraise on our own, but we have committees. So if you go to KG for Judge, it will give you a link to my committee. Mm-hmm. And I hope they'll look me up. I hope maybe they've seen my door hanger on their door, because we've been doing an awful lot of walking. And I hope they'll, vote for me, support me, and ultimately elect me the next judge.
Best wishes with this. I know your heart's in this, and as I said, running for office is it's not a sacrifice, but you're giving of yourself to the community, and I want to commend you for doing that, because it's not easy making the decision, and then once you do it, I'm sure there have been times where you're like, oh man, I'm pooped. I'm getting up and I'm doing it, but
sometimes I'll take a big long nap.
I want a nap.
So,
yeah.
Yes. Sometimes you have to just give up when you say you've had enough. So
yeah. Did I ask you the questions that you wanted to discuss as we're winding this down?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think we've covered it.
And we're also here with Jason Sikora of Raider. And Jason, are there any questions that you would like to ask of Kay?
Certainly. sorry, I was muted on this end. You guys can't see me, so you can't see me sitting over here. Kay, first of all, thank you for being here. This is fantastic.
Thanks.
Two questions, pretty light here. You kind of already answered it, but your favorite and least favorite part of the campaigning process?
Let's see. My favorite part of campaigning is definitely meeting people from all over the district. That has been a real joy, hearing people ask about what you do, where you're from, and really, if you talk to anyone in this community long enough, you end up either being related to them or having a friend of a friend connection. So that has been the best part. The worst part has been, at times, people draw conclusions about you without knowing who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And so it really bothers me when someone will have an opinion, but yet, and we hear about it, but I want them to come to me directly, because I'm really very open about who I am. Ask me who I am, I'll defend who I am, and I'll tell you why that is or is not an important factor. So.
Excellent, excellent. And then finally, any advice for anybody who's, you know, looking to follow in a path similar to yours and ultimately, you know, end up campaigning to be judge?
Following in my path to be a judge or to be a lawyer?
Well, how about both?
Okay. As far as following in my path to be a lawyer, I have been around a lot of young lawyers. I have actually been a mentor through the Bar Association. I've signed up to do that. I have many friends who send their daughters to me who are in undergrad to shadow me, because I feel so strongly about what good lawyers can do. Mm-hmm. And it's not a cliche, and I know we're the brunt of every joke, but there are days where when they come with me and follow me around and see the people that I talk to and the things that I do, that they can see that it's a very noble profession. It is a profession that does truly impact our community and impacts people's lives. So what can they do? I mean, once they get out of law school, I think clerking is a mm-hmm. wonderful option. I think it teaches you so much more than what you learn in law school. It does give you that instant mentoring. I do believe that people should open their eyes to the different options that are available, because you don't all have to be in litigation. You can be in any other area of work. Broadcasting, most of your broadcasters are actually lawyers. Sports broadcasters and national broadcasters are mostly lawyers on the networks. So it is just a very diverse area, and I highly encourage that. So I tell people, get your degree, follow what you like, and it's the path's going to lead you. As far as for anyone interested in running for office, I think everyone should do it once, but that's being a little silly with that. But it's such a eye-opening experience. It's so enriching that I think it is something that if they're at all thinking that this is they want public life, then I think they need to go ahead and try, because you'll regret it if you never do it. And for me, it's something I really had a desire to do.
Gotcha. Excellent. Well, again, thank you for being here. And Jan, thank you for letting me ask some questions.
Thank you, Jason.
Thank you.
You know, one thing about being a candidate, I think it really helps if you volunteer to help others, because there's so much that you don't even realize is going to come your way. And like you said, you can't really do the fundraising, but you can select people, you know, that would be apart from you, but that are on your team that can raise money. But just learning about how to canvass door to door, how to manage your time, you know, how much do things cost? It's so expensive to run for office.
It is. And you know what? Running for office doesn't just occur the day you Mm-mm. decide you're running. If someone, and this does add to that, if someone is interested, if they are truly committed to public service, I think they should show that in what they do. If you look at my resume, I've always been a joiner. I've always been a participant. I've always been someone who wants to better wherever I am. If that to me is the path to running for public office, is you have to demonstrate a desire to do something that of which you're not getting anything back.
Well, you get back a perspective on the community.
Right.
But you're right. It's not like paid work. But I find that people that have been really engaged before they run for office, they have a better feel for how the community runs, what the issues are, maybe some of the things that they'll have to deal with. And it's really good experience, too, working with people from all different walks of life.
So, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Kay Carey Gautreau, thank you for coming to Discover Lafayette to share your story. I want to wish you the best of luck, and you and Mitch and Michelle and Matthew, that you survive the next, we're here on what, September 29th, I think? So we've got a little bit more than a month, and it's going to fly by. So I encourage people that are listening to this, please visit Kay's Facebook. You can just Google Kay Gautreau, G-A-U-T-R-E-A-U-X. It comes up.
Yes.
All the different things come up. But get to know her. Get to know the seat. Again, it's in Lafayette Parish, but you'll be serving, the judge will be serving three parish area. And I'd like to thank our listeners for supporting Discover Lafayette. You can find Kay's interview and gosh, over 165 other interviews at discoverlafayette.net. And our work is made possible by our sponsors, of course, here at Raider. Jason Sikora and Chris Raider and the whole team at Raider just have made my life so joyful. I appreciate you guys. Also, I want to thank Iberia Bank, Lafayette General Health, and Rally Marketing. On behalf of Discover Lafayette, this is Jan Swift.